this evening. I'm going to give a talk for about 15 minutes. I'll see how long it goes. And every now and again, people send emails. Ajahn Brahm, I listen to you on the internet. Can you give a talk about this or something else? And so that's the subject of this talk this evening is going to be about Buddhism and the body. Because somebody wrote an email quite a while ago, and because I've been doing other things or we have visiting monks, I haven't had a chance to talk about this subject. So this is the Buddha and the body. And a person asks this because sometimes that the body can be a source of problem and trouble, especially if it's not the body you want it to be. Because we have in our cultures certain ideas of what a person should look like, and for some people that causes an immense amount of trouble and stress, especially to women, but not just to women, to old people who want to be young, to fat monks who want to be thin monks. So whatever it is, it's always lots of trouble and problem with this body. And so I want to find out, what does this body mean? How does the Buddhism look at it? Especially how does the Buddhism regard the problems which the body causes and how to solve that those problems? And also, the email said, what is the connection between the body and the mind? And this is really where we get into the important part of Buddhism, because Buddhism has always stressed the difference between the mind and the body and gives it a way to have another perspective upon this body, how to liberate ourselves from this body. Because the big problem with a body is just our identification with it. When we think that this is me, I am the fat monk, I am the skinny monk, I am the beautiful girl or the ugly woman, I am just the paraplegic, or I am the fit one. Each one of those identifications is where we cause the problem and trouble. Because no matter what you want to be with this body, it does not last. It changes all the time so quickly. Do all the beautiful models get their pimples and get ugly? Too quickly do all the fit young footballers sort of get weak and old? And this is one of our problems. That if we have an ideal of happiness connected to this body, you're asking for trouble, because it does not last. I remember as a young man being told the ancient Chinese proverb, which was, you know, to men, never marry a beautiful girl. He said, never marry a beautiful girl. If you marry a beautiful girl, the beauty does not last. But if you marry a good cook, and that lasts. This lasts a bit longer. And people say, well, you can always get takeaway these days. So. Well, the same goes for blokes as well. The point is that so often, as we look at a body, we think that's the person. And our society sometimes encourages that, the person being the body. And Buddhism makes a big deal about that, and the person is not the body. The person is just a vehicle. Sorry, no, the body is the vehicle. That's right, I got it right way around. The body is just a vehicle. Just like you have your car, and sometimes people identify with their car. Look, I've got a Ferrari. Look, I've got a Rolls. And actually, that some of you know that one of our Anangarika smashed our car some time ago. So we just got the insurance check yesterday. So we're in the market for a new car now. And guess what car we're going to get? Because monks identify with their cars as well. We've decided to get a funeral hearse. You know, the thing which have the coffins in the back? Because that's very typical for a monk, actually, to drive around in a funeral hearse. And it's got many advantages by buying a hearse for the monastery. It means that, you know, they usually come with standard features like coffins in the back, which means that I can have a rest when I come up here. I can sleep in the back and the police will never stop you. And number two, the insurance premiums are very low on hearses, because who would, in their right mind, would steal a hearse? So you don't have to worry about immobilizers. The coffin in the back is immobilizing enough. And the police will never stop you for speeding. Even they will be too scared to stop a hearse. So imagine. And the second thing, the last thing, that we can always hire it out for Buddhist funerals so we can get sort of, you know, our money back. So you think you get many people in the hearse, you know, these days. So But that's just the monks identifying with their vehicle. Because monks are always weird and I like doing these weird things. But we identify with our vehicle, we identify with our body. And that's where we get into lots of trouble. This is called attachment. We think we are our body. And because Buddhism is not about sort of theories, about how to live happily in life, how to get rid of the problems of life, how to understand what the real difficulty is. It's not the body is the problem, it's thinking that body is you. That's the problem. And because of that, you see these poor people. It used to be just girls, but now it's boys as well, getting Botox injections. Or going down to get sort of dye their hair. I don't dye my hair. Don't have that problem at all. It's one of the reasons why we're bored. We don't have to go to the hairdressers. Isn't that marvelous? It's how much money do you spend on hairdressers? Actually, looking around, you're all pretty scruffy. I don't think you spend very much anyway. But some people spend a heap of money sort of dyeing their hair, perming their hair and doing what else. What do you do that for? Because we identify, that's me. And put all this grease and muck on our body called makeup and think that's me. This is the problem here, because by thinking that that's ourselves, we identify that and we want to be beautiful, we want to be attractive, we want to be something other than we are, and that is called a lot of suffering. And especially for poor people growing up who are looking for a partner in life, who buy into the thing that you have to be beautiful to get a partner, you have to be fit to have a partner. And my goodness, surely that shouldn't be. You don't just live with a body if you get married. You live with a person. And the body might be very beautiful, but if their mind is all over the place and they've got a really ugly mind, which would you rather live with? I know that having a beautiful mind, if I was single looking for a person, the beautiful mind is the most important thing to live with. Someone who's caring, someone who's forgiving, someone who can listen, and someone who just enjoys your company. Isn't that more important than just a beautiful body who always is getting angry at you, demanding, wanting this and wanting that? So, one of the reasons why that proverb, apparently, of never marry a beautiful woman or a beautiful man, was because if a person was ugly, they'd have to develop their inner qualities to be able to attract a man. They'd have to not just be a good cook, but be a charming person, be kind, be generous, be loving. They'd have to develop the other part of themselves to compensate for their ugliness. So, that other side of them is what really makes a person beautiful. So, the beauty is not in the face or in the figure, is it? And what actually would we really mean by beauty? What is beautiful is something which attracts somebody else or something else. So what is really attractive? What not just attracts but keeps the other people there. And it's not just the body. It is the character, the thing inside. As I was saying just about getting a vehicle for our monastery. They say, we should get a safe vehicle, get something which will protect the monks, because there's only a few monks, we're an endangered species in the world, especially here in Australia, so we've got to look after them. So they say, the most important safety feature of a car is the driver. And that's the most important safety feature of a car. The same, the most important thing of you is not your body, it's the driver, the person within. And so, when we look upon the body is, we're stuck with the body, we look after it, we care for it, but we don't identify with it. We look upon it as if it's a driver of our car, as we are the driver and this is our car, this is the vehicle we're stuck with in this life. And you know why people have different types of bodies? Why people have healthy bodies, why they do have beautiful bodies? It's the same as when we crashed our car. The reason why we can buy a new car, a good car, a new hearse, top of the range in funeral hearses. No, we're not going to get a hearse, that's only a joke. We get a proper car. But the reason why we can get a good car is because we keep on paying our insurance premiums. If you pay your insurance premiums and your car has a crash or gets stolen, then you can buy a new car. However, if you get cheaper insurance, and if you don't give up the premiums, when your car gets stolen or it crashes, all you're left with is an old bomb. That's all you can afford. And that is a simile, which many of you may recall, is a simile for the Buddhist law of karma. This is a body you've got now, and if you don't pay your insurance premiums on this body, make good karma, be kind, be generous, be good, then when this body crashes or gets stolen, your next body will be an old bomb. And you're stuck with that for your whole life. So that's why karma is the insurance policy for your next body, for your next vehicle. That's all it is. So make sure you don't forget your payments. But we're saying here that the body is just a vehicle which we use. So we don't really concern ourselves so much. It doesn't matter sort of whether it's a Rolls Royce or whether it's a Toyota or a Ford or a Holden. As long as it can get you to the Buddhist society on a Friday night and get you back home again, that's a good car. So what we really mean here is actually how it's used is most important. So when we've got a body, it's not really what it looks like. It's how we make use of it is the point. So we're not attached to our looks. If we're attached to a body at all, it's attached to how we're making use of this body in this world. To make sure we train this body, we look after this body, not just for our own happiness, to be of service to others. Sometimes people do, you know, ask you what the point of life is. And there's a dual purpose to life. The first is your own happiness. And the second is for the happiness of others. So use this body to give your own happiness, wisdom, peace, contentment. But also use this body, this vehicle of yours, to give happiness to others, to do some service to the world, to have a point to your life. So when you die, you realize, yes, you have actually contributed to our society, to our world. You've done something, even small things, that your life has created more happiness for people in this world rather than less. So our body, that's its purpose. That's why we have a vehicle here, to get us from A to B. And this is where we're going, to get us to happiness. So we look upon this body, and when we look upon this body, we don't identify with it, and so certainly we don't look at this body because of its colour or because of its gender or because of its age. I know I've been looking at the newspapers about the Palestinians and the Israelis. You know, it's only because it says so in the paper that you can actually tell the difference between an Israeli and a Palestinian. They look the same to me. So why is it they're going to war? Why is it that you look at sort of people? What's the difference? What makes a person a Sri Lankan, a Thai, an Australian, or whatever? What's the difference? What's the difference between an Australian and a Kiwi? And I'll be... Remember, you're Buddhist, you've got to be kind. I know this is Australia, but... There ain't no difference. I spent 9 years in Thailand living with the Thais, and they're just the same. No difference at all. Doesn't really matter who you are. Tell the same jokes. Enjoy the same company. Do the same things. That's why I was actually quite privileged, actually. Maybe it's part of my good karma, because my parents were quite poor. Grew up in a very poor suburb of London, and the school I went to was full of migrants. And I must say that I became colourblind. It's a very lovely word, become colourblind. It means you can still see oranges, yellows and greens, but you can't see the difference between people. And basically, I didn't care what colour the person's skin was, where they came from, as long as they played football well, they were my friend. And so it doesn't matter. And it's when we actually focus on a body and think that because they were born, say, in Sri Lanka, they are Sri Lankan. Because I was born in England, I was English. You know, I don't know who I am when it comes to a country. You know, the Australians are playing the Sri Lankans in cricket right now. You know, that's quite true. I support the Sri Lankans. I don't know why. And actually, I did that some years ago. This is a confession. Some of you know this story. Some years ago, here in sort of Perth, a couple of the Sri Lankan kids came up to me that they the Sri Lankan cricket team were in town. They were playing Australia at the Wacker, just in East Perth. And they asked for some of these holy strings. You see some of these Buddhas, they put this, they call it pirit thread. The monks do some blessing on this thread and you try it around your wrist, supposed to protect you. And the Sri Lankan cricket team actually asked for 12 pieces of string. So, you know, they're Buddhists. I thought, oh, I'm a Buddhist, why not? So I gave them these 12 pieces of string. Supposed to bring them good luck. Now, they lost that match, but... Now, this is the important story. A couple of months later, all you cricket fanatics will remember this. A couple of months later, there was a World Cup cricket in India and Sri Lanka. And the final was between Australia and Sri Lanka. And Sri Lanka won. They beat Australia. And I remember in the newspaper the following day, I saw this picture, a big picture, of the Sri Lankan cricket captain, Ranatunga. He had holding up the World Cup. And because he was holding up, I recognised the piece of string he had on his wrist. That was my string. You know, that was why they beat Australia at the World Cup, because of my string. I didn't get there telling anyone at the time, because you know how Australia is so sports mad. I'd been thrown out of the country, no matter who I was. I was the reason why Australia lost the World Cup. But what we're talking about there is that, why do you identify with being this, that or the other? You know, I was born in England. They had the Rugby World Cup a few months ago. People asked me, because I was born in England, living in Australia, who do you really support? And I say, I wait for half time and see who's winning. Why not do that? It's much more fun, because then you're happy. You support the winning side. Now, what we're really saying, why do people identify with the country of their birth? These days, we move around so much. It's so hard to identify with being this, that or the other. When I do go back to London, it's like going home. This was one of the amazing things happened, that I went back to London, it was like going home. And then on the way back, I visited Thailand. It was like going home. And then I went to Singapore, it's like going home. When I go to Colombo, because there's lots of Buddhists there, it's like I'm going home. Now I come to Australia, it's like coming home. Isn't it wonderful to have so many homes? So wherever you go, whatever airport you land in, you're coming home. I think that's a beautiful idea. And that's actually how many people live these days. The world is their home. And they ask, you know, what nationality you are. You say, earthling. So I'm an earthling. And maybe later on, when they start a Buddhist society, somewhere on some other planet, and then when I go to Mars to teach a retreat, then I maybe I'll say this, I'm a solar system ing or whatever it is. But why do we identify with being this particular country? Silly idea. When we don't identify with being a particular country, how on earth can we have wars? It's just identifying with bodies, that's all. Some bodies are brighter, darker, smaller, shorter, fatter, thinner. Who cares about that? I don't care about that. And it's also with genders as well. What is the difference between a man and a woman? Perhaps, you know, the reason I couldn't find the difference is probably one of the reasons I became a monk. Yeah, it's only on the outside there's a bit of a difference, but on the inside, human beings are human beings. You know, they say that men are from Mars and women are from Venus. Oh, that's just a nice title for a book and made the author a lot of money, but that ain't true. Human beings are human beings. And isn't it marvelous when people can realize just what we have in common, focus on what we have in common, which transcends the body, and so that we don't have any of this, you know, problem with gender wars or even age wars. Look at the difference we have between a kid and an old man or an old woman. What's the difference? Those of you who are getting old, do you really feel old? What is actually old age? The body feels old, but the mind feels just the same as it always was. And so you say, what is actually, what does get old? The mind doesn't get old, just the body gets old, that's all. And if you identify with that, you'd hate getting old. And you'd be embarrassed when you get old. You know, it's part of the Buddhist tradition is that when it's your birthday, you usually actually go to a Buddhist temple actually to do something good, to make good karma. No, because you know, you may think I'm running out of good karma, I better make some more so I can have another year. But also that when they, instead of actually trying to get something for your birthday, it's actually giving something for your birthday, doing something good. Completely different idea. When I explain this to children, when I say, look, in Buddhist countries, when it's your birthday, you don't expect to have presents, you expect to give presents. Give it away. And straight away they say, oh, I don't like that idea. Then I said, look, how many friends do you have? There are 6 or 7 close friends. I said, look, that means that 6 or 7 times a year you get presents. But now you only get presents once a year. When you get, you see how much better it is to give? And actually they bought into that one and said, that's a very good idea. It is actually much better to give. So people actually go to the temple when it's their birthday and actually to give food to the monks. We give them a blessing. But also it's a great time because actually to ask how old they are. Usually they sometimes lie to other people, because it's in front of monks, they think, oh dear, I better tell the truth. Otherwise something bad will happen to me. So they actually tell the truth. You find out actually how old people are. And I wonder why it is people don't want to actually own up to their real age. There's nothing wrong with that. And everyone knows I'm just about 23. No, I'm 52. Because in Asian countries, it's actually the older you are, the more respect you have. And I couldn't believe this at first, that when I went to Thailand, in a Buddhist country, people would add years onto their age. They would. They'd say they're 55 when they're only 52. They'd say they're 65 when they're only 60. Because they were proud to get old. They got more respect. They were wiser. They were more mellow in their life. They'd had the experience of life. Their mind had been better trained. Their body was falling apart, but their mind was good. And it was a society which respected the mind and the qualities of wisdom, knowledge, experience. And that's why people were proud to get old. In our society where we worship the body, that's why people lie. And they always want to stay young. And they hate the idea of getting old. I think at one of the last birthday parties, let's call them birthday party, come to a monastery, on the birthday cake, they didn't have a sort of candles, they had a question mark candle. You guess how old I am. But what we're saying there is that, why do we worry about this body business? It can create a lot of problems with us when we identify, we think that that's who we are. And it means that some of our young kids, especially young girls, some of the pain and trouble they get into, trying to identify, think that their body is them. And they have to be beautiful, they have to be slim, they have to, be like the latest model. People identify too much with that. Even actually identify with like the countries. I went to a Harmony Day celebration a few years ago, and one of the people giving a little talk there, a marvelous lady, she's a cook, she's on the television, because I don't watch the television, I'm not quite sure what her name is, but she's like an Afro-Australian. Probably some of you know who she is, an Afro-Australian, very funny lady. But apparently there was some convention for multiculturalism or something in Canada, and she was sent as the Australian representative to this big convention in Canada somewhere, I think it was in Vancouver, she said. And at the beginning of the convention, they had people from all over the world. They asked everyone to stand up to tell everyone where you were from. And when she stood up, this African lady, with the Afro haircut, really fat, and said, I'm from Australia. Everyone cracked up laughing. She thought it was a joke. They always expect people from Australia to be like Paul Hogan or Kylie Minogue or whatever. And it's amazing just how we have this idea of what an Australian is, what an African is, what an English person is, what something else is. We should not identify with this body of ours. Be free of that. And then we can really sort of be part of a world, rather than just be part of one particular country. We can be part of the human race, rather than just one gender. We can be just part of just a whole range of ages, rather than just our age. So when we stop identifying with our body, it makes it much easier. And also it means when our body starts to wear out, we don't get so upset. We realize that this is par for the course. This body wears out. That's what it has to do. Just like a car wears out. You can't expect it to keep on going forever and ever. You notice this. I notice many people as they get old. Notice their legs go. They can't walk properly. They have to sort of walk with a stick. Sometimes their arms are very weak. Sometimes they can't even see properly. And they can't hear. All of the organs of your body eventually break down, except one. I notice this all the time. For old people, the one organ which stays even stronger than ever is their mouth. Old people, they can really talk. I don't know why it is. Everything else gets weak, but not their mouth. See, and I'm a case in point. So this is what happens. So we have to accept this, understand this. This is par for the course. And so if we accept it, then we grow old gracefully. We don't worry about it so much. So when we don't worry about it so much, we're not struggling against nature, that's when we get greater happiness and peace. Too often the problem of suffering is struggling against nature, trying to make this world something it can never be. So why don't we learn to live with nature, embrace nature, be at peace with nature, accept it? Then we find we have so much more peace in life, and we can enjoy the different stages of our life. Enjoy just the different seasons of our year. When it's hot, we say, isn't it wonderful when it's hot? And you don't have to wear all these jumpers, you don't have to sort of have all these heaters. You know, you can actually go outside at night time to meditate. It's wonderful when it's hot. Then it gets rainy. Isn't it wonderful when it's rainy? It's nice and green grass. The kangaroos are very fat when it gets rains. And also the first rains is very welcome in our monastery because it gives the kangaroos a wash. They're very smelly. It's the only wash they get when it rains. And when it's cold, isn't it wonderful when it's cold? Cold is very good meditation weather. The point is you appreciate every part of the season. As we appreciate every part of our life, appreciate every year of our age, what a wonderful thing it is, you know, to be 6 or 7. What a wonderful thing it is to be a teenager. What a marvelous thing it is to be in your 20s. How great to be in your 30s. How lovely to be 40, to be 50. How wonderful to be growing into the maturity of your 60s. How wise to be 70. How peaceful to be 80. Why can't we do that and accept these things? The reason is because we attach to this body. We want it to be something else. Of course, when you do get old, you get more pain, more stiffness. But it's only the people who want to live like a young person rather than just allowing the body to age and being with it, working with it, using it as it is. There's lots of advantages in being old. You don't have to get up on a Monday morning to go to work. Do you like going to work on a Monday morning? People will help you. Usually, elders are still in our society, they get a bit of respect. So really when we can actually put a positive spin on it and we don't attach to these things, we don't get into so much problem. And the other thing is with the pain and difficulties in our body, again, when we want it to be something else, that is where the problem comes. You know, as a Buddhist, you learn to be with pain and sickness, inability, and learn how to embrace it and make something of it. Instead of fighting what you cannot change, the old saying, you can't fight what you cannot change, you can actually learn from it, grow from it. I was saying to someone just earlier, the old simile, that sometimes in life you come to this center and you tread in dog poo on the way here. Life is sometimes painful and unpleasant, but you can always take that dog poo home and dig it in under your mango tree. And then your mangoes are sweet. You know why they're sweet? Because of the dog poo. Now that means that all the pain, the difficulty, you can actually dig that in. That's the dog poo of your life. And we do need a bit of poo to be able to actually to grow. And if it was just all fun and games, you would learn nothing. You would have no compassion. Which starts to put us into what the mind is all about. This is the heart of us. It's like the driver of the car. And for those of you who don't know what that mind is, you just do a little bit of meditation. The more you let go of the body, the more you get quiet and still, the more you see this thing we call the mind. And it gets it's a wonderful insight to know this mind is different and separate from the body. You understand what I meant by saying what we have in common between the genders, between the races, between the nations, let alone those, what we have in common with the animals of our world. What all beings have in common is this thing we call a mind. And you see this very easy in animals who cry, in animals who sometimes get angry, animals who squabble. If you ever have a bird bath, watch, you know, the birds actually line up in queue. I remember seeing this. I used to have a bird bath in a monastery I was in for a while. Just put water in every afternoon, and the birds would actually come for the evening bath, and they'd wait in the queue. But sure enough, one bird would jump the queue, and all the other birds would jump the bird, and they'd squabble, and chase him out, and then they'd go back in the queue again, just like human beings. You know, there's some birds with big egos. And they jump queues as well. Animals, I'm sure you've all seen animals, you know, who've got a mind just like you have. Can be silly and stupid sometimes. And can be wise and kind sometimes. I remember that story of a pair of parrots. One parrot had been killed by a car or a truck at the corner of the Southwest Highway in Kingsby Drive, just 2 kilometres from our monastery. He was lying dead by the side of the road, this parrot. On a branch of a tree overhanging the dead parrot was a second parrot looking down. Because we actually go up and down, it wasn't myself, it was one of the other people who was working at our monastery. They told me that they went up and down that road for 3 days in a row, and that parrot hadn't moved. He saw it first in the morning. In the afternoon, when he went back to go home, that parrot was still there. The following morning, it hadn't moved. And the next evening, it was still there. As with the third day. For 3 days, there was a parrot on the side of the road, dead. And there was another parrot just looking down. Parrots mate for life. If that isn't grief, I don't know what is. That was a parrot grieving for his dead mate, unable to move or fly away for 3 days. Animals have the same mind as we have. When we understand what we have in common, then we can understand sort of how we can live at peace and harmony together. We understand what is really important. This body of ours is just a vehicle. Now, some people have the good fortune of dying temporarily and remembering what it's like, because these out of the body experiences, these temporary deaths floating out of your body, is an experience of letting go of the body, of being apart from the body, of you being without anybody. And everyone who has those experiences, always, without exception, comes back and says it's just the most wonderful, beautiful experience. How can that be, a person looking down at their dead body, or a body on the operating table, or whatever? How can that be, if there isn't such a thing called a mind? If anyone is interested in that, 2 years ago there was a article in The Lancet magazine. This was a journal of the British Medical Association, one of the oldest and most prestigious medical journals on our planet, done by Professor Pim van Lommel, who, in his research, found that people had these out-of-body experiences only at the time when they were brain dead, medically dead. They float out of the body, and they'd all have the same experiences, roughly. Beautiful, wonderful experiences of peace and happiness. Now, some of you said, well, that might be interesting, but how do I know? I haven't died yet, but you can die. You can die from your body right in this moment by meditating. Because this is what meditation is. It's letting go of your body so you can understand what the mind is. It's important to be able to do this. To get so deep in your meditation, the whole body disappears. As if you haven't got a body, but you're still perfectly alert. In fact, more awake than usual. Happy, blissed out, in the realm of the mind, apart from your body. This is what happens in the deep meditations. And what you come back with from those experiences is the same as what people come back with from the out-of-the-body experiences, in that they realize they aren't their body. That this body will one day be given up forever. And they can more identify with being their mind, the stream of consciousness. And when they do that, it means that they are no longer afraid of death. Because what is death anyway? But just the letting go of this body. People are afraid of death when they think that they die. That you, the person, dies with the body. You think there's nothing left. That's what the fear is. But if you realize that this is your body which dies, but you carry on, then it's not so much of a concern. You understand what's really happening because you've experienced it in your meditation. You've experienced it in an out-of-the-body experience, maybe. And you know that you aren't this body. When one understands this, it makes life a much more sense. Makes much more sense of life. You have had many bodies. You have been, all you girls have been boys. All you boys have been girls. All you heterosexuals may have been homosexuals. All you homosexuals have been heterosexuals. We've been all sorts of things in the past. Mr. Jack Van Tongeren was probably an Asian in his past life. It would be wonderful if they can remember these things. Mr. Bush was probably an Arab. Mr. Sharon was a Palestinian. Wouldn't it be wonderful if they could remember these things? And then how on earth could you actually hate enough to kill another human being? I think it would be impossible when you realize what this body truly was. Just a vehicle. Look after your vehicle. It's not a person. You can't identify that this is what a Buddhist looks like, this is what a Christian looks like, this is what an Arab looks like, this is what a girl looks like, what a man looks like. All this stuff about identification with the body causes too much problems. If you identify instead with the mind, with the heart, then we understand what we should really love and care for. We should actually respect beautiful hearts, beautiful minds. We should have glossy magazines, not of beautiful girls, but of people with beautiful characters. We should have the glossy magazines, maybe of monks and nuns on the front cover. Monk magazine. Or whatever it is, so we actually were celebrating something which is much more important than just someone who looks good. Or, you know, can kick a football. Isn't it much more important that we actually value the mind? When we actually value the mind much more, we've got a different paradigm to live by. We've got different things which have a different sense of importance. It's more important to be kind, to be generous, to be loving, to be forgiving, than to be beautiful. And then people wouldn't spend so much time going to beauty clinics. They wouldn't spend so much time going to the hairdressers. They wouldn't spend so much time in the gym. They'd spend more time here in the Buddhist center, making their minds beautiful. Or going on retreats. Or doing whatever which is going to make them a more kind, generous, loving person. And if we really valued the mind instead of the body, wouldn't it be a more happy and peaceful world? Because then we're valuing what really is worth valuing. peace, kindness, tolerance, harmony, generosity. All those beautiful words which people talk about, but they think the body is much more important. So we're trying to find out what the mind is. And when the mind is trained well, usually the body follows suit. It doesn't really matter so much what the body is doing as what the mind is doing. Because it's so well known by science, by medicine. If you have a happy mind, then you're going to have a healthy body. Recently, about 2 years ago, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, they had the SARS crisis in Singapore. And everyone was really afraid. When you got through the immigration, there was the cameras testing whether you were a bit hot or too cold. I made a determination in my mind to make sure my brain was cold because I had lots of talks to give that those few days. But when I got through there, the organizers said they'd actually hired this huge convention center with about 3,000 seats for 4 days in a row for my talks. And as soon as I came out, it was a lot of expense. This was in Suntec City, those of you who know Singapore. It's a huge expense that they'd laid out for these series of talks. And they told me that I think 1 day before, the government had closed all the schools, told all the children to go home because they were afraid that the SARS was spreading. And the government had announced that morning for all the Singaporeans not to go to any public gatherings. And there it was. I was supposed to give a talk that night in the middle of the SARS crisis. They asked, should we cancel? I said, no, go ahead. And they said, but somebody might get SARS. And I said, how many people have got SARS already? Because I read the newspaper on the plane. 99 in the Straits Times. You know, the Straits Times, those from Singapore. On the front cover, 99 they had got SARS so far. So I said, well, how many people in Singapore? I said, about 4 million. I said, well, that means 3,999,901 people hadn't got SARS. Let's go ahead. I had statistics on my side. It was true. It was actually 40,000 to 1 you wouldn't get SARS. I think that's about right, isn't it? That's right, 40,000 to 1. And so everybody came along. And I was so impressed. So not one of those people had a face mask on. And I told them, look, the reason why will people get those SARS because they're too attached to their body, they're too worried about their body. When you're worried, that's when you get sick. Worry is a big health hazard. It's actually, some people ask me why I'm so fat. It's because I don't worry enough. It's not I eat too much, it's just I don't worry, I laugh too much. That actually makes you fat. That's my excuse anyway. So what we're saying is that when you don't worry so much, it means that you don't get so sick. When you laugh a lot, and I got people to laugh a lot during those talks, laughter releases endorphins into the bloodstream, and those in blood, it makes you feel happy. It's nature's painkillers. And it also enhances your immune system. So I said, enjoying coming to the talk is actually like a shot of anti-SARS vaccine. And especially when you laugh a lot, because that SARS was actually a respiratory disease. So I said, when you laugh a lot, you're exercising your lungs too, making them strong, so they won't get SARS to begin with. And of course, not one person got SARS who went to my talks. See? It proved it. Well, the trouble is we worry too much of our body. When we worry too much, that is the problem. Our mind is the Buddha said the mind is a forerunner of all things. Get your mind straight, first of all. The body will follow suit in most cases. Not always, but you're increasing your chances that your body will be healthy, your body will be strong. Mental disease is one of the greatest causes of physical disease, especially some of these diseases which attack your immune system. Why is it some people get these diseases, other people don't? I think I said the last time I was here, 2-3 weeks ago, that doctor in Malaysia who said she knew when a person came into her surgery, she was a specialist, an oncologist, cancer specialist, she could tell straight away who's going to survive and who didn't by their attitude to their disease. Didn't matter just how advanced that disease was. It was the attitude which was by far, she told me, was by far the best indicator of survival. The mind, the forerunner of all things. You make a happy mind, a good mind, a joyful mind. It's amazing just how long you live. It's been a long time. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but it's a long time since I did a Buddhist funeral for people who come here. See, it works. What we're saying is that happiness, a happy mind, developing that mind, strengthening that mind, paying attention to that mind, paying attention to what is much closer to the core of you, is much more important than this body. When I was young, I was into yoga. I was into having vegetarian food and health food. I went on a 10-day macrobiotic diet. All my friends thought I was crazy. I remember just in the cafeteria at the university, you know, that I had to have vegetarian food and had to shout down vegetarian to get the vegetarian food up. I remember my mates trying to tease me. I remember one of them coming up and said, "That's rabbit food." That's what I was eating, rabbit food. And I shot back and said, "Well, what are rabbits famous for? I'm going out tonight." That's a bit cheeky, but they asked a cheeky question. I gave a cheeky answer. But anyhow, that you did all this. I remember seeing this program on the TV called Yoga for Health. I think it was one of the first, probably was the first TV programs for yoga. And they had this man on there, this young American man who looked so fit, could get into all these amazing yoga postures, yoga asanas. And there's this beautiful woman on there as well as doing the yoga postures. I was a layman then. That was one of the main reasons I was watching the program. But just after I ordained as a monk, I was talking to one of the American monks. And I just mentioned that program to him. And he said a strange thing happened about 6 months after I ordained as a monk. That very, very healthy man, the yoga instructor, one of the first TV programs about yoga, this was 30 years ago, he went on the set and dropped down dead during a filming. So he can't be. He was doing yoga. He's only about 30. What it proved to me, even if you eat brown rice, it doesn't matter, you can still die at any time. What was most important is the mind rather than sort of... You know, food is important, yeah. Food is important, but the mind is also important. And, of course, the person who really exemplified that, you've heard his story, but it's one of my favorite quotes, was the American comic George Burns. He was 96, about 3 or 4 years from his 100th birthday. And this is an American comic. He's dead now, but he was drinking alcohol every day, eating fatty foods, smoking, doing all the things you're not supposed to do. And on his 96th birthday, he had a interview. And he said, "Aren't you worried about your lifestyle?" Staying out late at night as well. "Aren't you worried about your lifestyle, drinking, carousing?" He was 96, for heaven's sake. "Aren't you worried about your lifestyle, drinking, eating fatty food, staying out late at night, smoking?" And he shot back immediately without any hesitation. He said, "I'm not worried about my lifestyle. My wife used to be worried about my lifestyle. She died 5 years ago." It's worry which kills you. Isn't it? It's the mind is a forerunner of all things. So we're talking about the body and the mind. Of those two, the mind is most important. The body will grow old and die anyway. The mind will go on with you for another life. Or even more. And rebirth. And life to life to life. You don't carry your body with you, but my goodness, you carry your mind with you. Your character, your love, your generosity, your forgiveness, your openness and tolerance. So doesn't it make it more important that those are the things we develop in our life? Bodies come and bodies go, but it's the tears in your heart. Those are the things which you can deal with. And you can change those tears to smiles, to be at peace, have a beautiful mind which can accept, which can be at peace with, can love itself and love others, can be tolerant and can see just whether it's an old person, a young person, a black person, a white person, whether it's a woman or a man or an animal, whatever they are, can see that which we have in common, can go beyond the body to see the mind and have a mind which can connect with others in kindness, in love, in generosity. Kindness, love, generosity, giving, all the same word, coming from the same roots. This is what we mean by having a pure heart. So that's why in Buddhism we don't have a body which we worship. We worship something very similar, the Bodhi. Bodhi is enlightenment. So we don't worry about bodies. The Buddha never became enlightened under the Bodhi tree. He became enlightened under the Bodhi tree. The Bodhi is a purification of the mind, the enlightenment of the mind, the awakening of the mind, the beautification of the mind. So you can very well say that the Bodhi tree was the first beauty parlor in the world, where the Buddha beautified his mind and became the enlightened one for the compassionate benefit of the whole world. So when we're talking about bodies and what they're all about, this is what body's all about. You've had this one, you probably have other ones. Here we go again. Now I'm a girl, now I'm a boy, now I'm old, now I'm young, blah, 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 blah. So don't be so concerned about the body. Don't worry too much about it. Put more effort in concern about your mind. If you develop that, then you can be sick in the body. As the Buddha said, even though you may be sick in your body, please don't be sick in your mind. Even though you have pain in the body, you don't need to have pain in your mind. And I'll finish with one of the last stories to show how ecumenical I am this evening from Catholicism. One of my heroes is a person called San Lorenzo, Saint Lawrence. San Lorenzo was being tortured to death. Is that what happened to people in those days when they spoke too much? If I'd have been born 300 years ago, I'd be in big trouble as well, probably. But he was being burned to death, you know, in the Inquisition. And his last words before he lost consciousness, as he was being burnt, you know how painful being burnt is? His last words were, "Turn me over, this side's done." That's what I call a monk. Not concerned about his body, concerned about his mind, and compassionate as well, because he was concerned about all the other people watching him. He wanted to cheer them up. It's no fun watching someone being burnt to death. So he wanted to cheer them up with a nice joke. So even the Catholic saints told jokes. So that's a little talk today about the body and the mind. And you don't have to worry too much about what you look like in the body, but please make sure you look beautiful in the mind. Thank you. Okay, any questions about this evening's talk? About body stuff? No? Not even one question? Half a question? Yes, thank you. I suppose so, that as there's more equilibrium in the mind, there'll also be more sensitivity in the mind. And that more sensitivity in the mind will be more sensitivity to the body, just looking after it in a proper way. But not going overboard. So the mind is most important. That makes sense? Okay. Okay, we had our one question for tonight, the token question. Thank you very much. Now we have the announcements from Albert.